This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone, and today on the program, I'm joined by one of the pioneers of the knuckleball in Major League Baseball. He did it for 25 years. He's a Texas Rangers Hall of Famer. Welcome a good friend of mine to the program, Charlie Huff. Charlie, thanks for coming on the show.
Great to be with you, Booney. Been a while, too.
Yeah, it's been a while. You're in camp with the Dodgers. You're still going.
Yep.
Talked to you the other day. How's that going?
It's been great. You know, I work on the player development side, but I spent a couple days with the big league team, and we opened today already.
I saw that. I was at the gym, and I saw
it. 14-1 victory. But no, it's fun, and I work in the minor leagues.
For those of you watching the Boone, listening to the Boone Podcast, however you're getting this, I've known Charlie a long time. I mentioned at the top, he pitched in the big leagues for 25 years. I think that's top three or four in the history of the game. But I knew Charlie when I was a sophomore in high school. I'd go out to, I forget the name of the high school. It was myself and it was young Jimmy Campanis. And Jimmy, I was new to Southern California. My dad had just moved us across the country from Jersey. And he said, hey, Charlie Huff's going to throw us BP. Why don't you come out? I think I was a sophomore in high school. So we go back that far. By the way, none of that helped because I looked up our statistics before this show. Brett Boone, 0-6. Bob Boone, who used to tell me how much he hated facing you and any knuckleballer for that matter. He wasn't much better. He was better than me, but he was about 13-65. So seeing you early, Charlie, did not help my luck on the field.
Well, thanks. I needed a couple outs in there somewhere.
And the good thing about it is Aaron Boone missed you. So he probably wouldn't have bowed very well off either.
Yeah.
Why doesn't everybody throw a knuckleball?
Ah, wow. The game is changing. It's a little quicker, a little faster, I think. And we've put a priority on pitching, throwing hard. So as the minor leagues have shrunk down, the minor league jobs are harder and harder to get. So the guys we want to go after are the hard throwers. We don't have really time unless a guy is throwing it really good right away. And it's hard to do. It's hard to get a chance today. I think San Diego has a kid that's going to be pretty good throwing it. I haven't seen him live, but I've seen him on video, and it looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Well, it seems like everybody has a story with the knuckleball. The most I faced in the big leagues, faced Candiotti a bit. You at the very beginning of my career, had a bunch of ABs against Timmy Wakefield. I can't remember ever coming to the ballpark, Charlie, and saying, "Oh, thank goodness we got a knuckleballer tonight." It seemed like it's a different ball game. A lot of time, if you had your good one, it was luck. It doesn't matter how good I'm swinging right now. If Charlie's got his good knuckleball on the hill tonight, it doesn't matter because I'm going to swing where I think it's going to be, and sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. Once in a while, you catch a flat one. But the knuckleball pitcher, it seems to me, everybody has a similar story. You started as a conventional pitcher, turned into a knuckleball pitcher. For you, it was 1970, yeah. I believe, where you turned to the knuckleball. Went to AAA that year, killed it, and had like a 1.9 ERA something. Give me the evolution of it for you and how you got to that point and when you made that decision.
Well, I didn't have much opportunity or much reason to not try it. I was a sore arm starting pitcher in AA for 2 years, and I'm looking at guys passing me as far as being prospects. And a minor league coach said to me one day when I was playing catch, he said, "Hey, have you ever tried to throw a knuckleball?" I said, "Well, show me how." And he showed me a grip. His name was Goldie Holt. Showed me a grip. I tried it, played catch, and threw one after about five that didn't spin. And threw a couple more, and I went into the clubhouse. The manager was Tommy Lasorda. And I said, "Hey, I'm going to start throwing a knuckleball." And he said, "Well, you better, because you're on your last chance right here. You got to try something, you know." And Right. Being somebody that loved baseball, really did, and admired the real talented guys, you know, the guys that I got to play with. And I ended up coming up with something and giving a chance to compete against the best, best in the game. And so much fun.
The Negroes before my time never got to face one of those brothers. Candiotti, you, and Wakefield. And there's been a few others along the way, but those are the main ones that I'm familiar with that I've faced. I'm sure you've had opportunities through the years to sit down and talk. What is that like? Did you all have the same grip? Is it all the same premise? Because, Charlie, you see all of us, all the position players screwing around before the game, warming up in right field. We're always coming up with a knuckleball. Some guys have a good one. It's one thing to play catch. It's another thing to having to throw a strike in a big league game. But is it, do you all have to have something in common? Is it a knuckleball? Is it a nail ball?
It's fingernails.
Yeah.
We all basically threw it with the same grip. Although if you pictured your hand on the ball, some guys turn the ball to a different spot, but it's the same fingernail grip, hand shape on it, two fingers, and you may have it splitting the seams, may have it below the seams, wherever it fits your hand best. But I haven't seen anybody throw it with a kind of unique grip. You could be in a different spot. You know, there's been so many guys throw it. Some of the best recently, R.A. Dickey wins Cy Young throwing it. And I had the pleasure of working with him a little bit when he was first starting. So it was fun.
R.A. Dickey, though. Okay. Let me get there. Okay. I'm facing Charlie Huff. It doesn't matter. I'm pretty much know I'm getting a knuckleball every pitch. Unless, you know, you're in a situation where you got to throw a strike and you're just not finding it that AB, but you're pretty much throwing me a knuckleball every pitch. Wakefield, same thing. I was getting a knuckleball come hell or high water. Candiotti, different. Candiotti's going to throw me that curveball.
Good curveball. You're right.
But here's the thing with that. I can sit on a curveball. Okay. I can sit on Charlie Huff's knuckleball. And if you throw me a good one, it doesn't matter. If I'm sitting on Candiotti's curveball and he throws, I'm gonna touch it. I'm gonna hit it. It's like a Trevor Hoffman changeup. If Hoffy's got that good changeup, I'm sitting on it. It's 50-50 whether I get it, whether I'm still going to touch it. So there is a difference.
A really well-thrown knuckleball, it doesn't make sense to look for it, tell you the truth. Whenever I pitched against Tommy Candiotti or Phil or Joe Niekro, I would sit by the bat rack and say, don't look for a knuckleball. Because if he throws you a good one, you probably won't hit it. If he throws you a bad one, you'll hit it anyway. Don't let him get you out with a slider or a curveball or try to sneak a fastball by you.
I got to the point. It started with you, but I got to the point, and with Wakefield, I hated facing him. And R.A. Dickey, I did face R.A. Dickey, but he would mix in a heat or two here and there.
Right, right. He was a borderline big league pitcher.
Right.
Without it, you know, right. I was a guy that would have been back home playing in the men's league in Brea. You know, there was a big difference in that talent, you know, between R.A. and me. But right. We both found a way that we could compete in the big leagues.
And I think as position players, and I'm sure, you know, the team you were pitching for, you got a lot of feedback from probably during the game from your hitters going, I because it's a different game. It's almost like I come to the ballpark. If I'm feeling good, I'm thinking, oh, why do I have to have a knuckleballer tonight? And I almost went into a mode as I got older, got a little time, got a little experience. I wasn't going to allow one night against Charlie Huffer, one night against Tim Wakefield. That wasn't going to get me out of what I was in. So I was going to go up there maybe with my slow pitch softball swing. And sometimes I snuck a hit in and sometimes I didn't, but back to normal the next day.
Well, I think there's a lot of hitters that just would not want to make any kind of adjustment to face me one night or face Niekro or face any knuckleballer. You don't want to lose your good swing trying to do something different. And it makes sense, you know. But that kind of makes sense why you might want a knuckleballer on your team.
Yeah.
You know, they're hard to trust. We are hard to trust. I've had to coach a couple in the minor leagues, and oh, my gosh, what do we do? You know, walk, and then a home run. But you're not going to take him out because he's tired.
Right.
We never take him out because he's tired. You take him out because maybe he won't win.
When you started the knuckleball in 1970, you got some big league time. And I think 73, you stuck.
Yeah.
And you were pretty much out of the pen for Lasorda and the Dodgers. You move on to Texas in 1980. You become a starter. Give me the difference. I guess yours is going to be different anyway. The preparation as a bullpen guy. Being a knuckleballer, do you feel like you could throw much more often than another guy out there in the pen?
Well, I tried to. that's how I could make the team, would be available every night. But it was tough for me because I had a bad shoulder. I mean, and relieving in the big leagues is really hard to throw a knuckleball. It really is, because there's pressure to get it over. It's got to be a good one. Especially in the close games. And, you know, it was tough for me. I had some stretches where I was pretty darn good at it, but I was much better suited to be a starter and much harder to be a reliever. I take my hat off to it. Anybody that can be a big time reliever for 5 years in a row, oh my gosh, they're worth every penny they make.
Explain to me the difference now. Now 1980, you transition, become a starting pitcher. Was your in-between start time, your regimen, how you prepared for it, was it different than the others? Or as a starter, could you go back-to-back games if you had to?
I don't think I ever did back-to-back, but I may be the last guy to start 40 games. Yeah. You know, today a guy's going to start 30. Stars used to start 37 or something like that, four-man rotation type things.
Right.
But now we're getting closer to a six-man rotation. So a guy getting 30 starts is a horse. Somebody pitches 200 innings, he's a big-time starter. And when I was in there, it was more like a 250 to 280 was a big-time starter. So I changed my style. I didn't throw it as hard. I didn't try to make everybody miss it. I tried to just get it over.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And in between starts, what was different about your prep versus you only played with Nolan for a few years? I believe in 89, Nolan came to the Texas Rangers. Yeah. Give me an example. Prep versus his.
Well, a little different in talent level.
Did you have oven mitts on? Did you have oven mitts on in between starts?
Yeah. I threw twice usually. If we were on a 5-day, I threw twice. So you pitch a game, take a day off. The next day, I might just throw fastballs or straight balls. And then the following day, throw a bunch of knuckleballs, take a day off and pitch, depending on how bad my arm was feeling. To watch Nolan, that's a different level. That's maybe the best I've been around, for sure the best I've been around. But that is a power guy that is working hard one day in between. And I could throw, actually, I'd kind of play catch every day. But my routine to his, as far as effort level, firing a ball, nah. I was just playing catch, getting my fingers feeling good, feeling the grip and stuff. Pretty easy stuff.
But we do joke because it is, you throw it with your nails. So as much as I joke about it, your nails have got to be in a certain way. And life can happen. You know, anything could happen. You chip a nail, it's like, wait a minute, I got to start in 2 days. So how meticulous were you about that in between starts? How much did you really pay attention? Like, I got to keep, especially this hand, I got to keep these nails the way I want it.
Yeah, big time, big time. If I went and got a manicure, I'd let them do 8 fingers, and I did my own 2.
Right, so you had, and the night before a start, did you have a routine where, all right, this is the way it's got to be?
No, not particular. I mean, I took care of my hand, and in 25 years, I never cracked a nail. I never had one problem with it. And then, of course, playing golf one day, I poked myself with a tee under my fingernail, my index finger, got infected, nail came completely off. It would have been like having Tommy John surgery if I was still playing. I'd already retired, but I mean, it was the darndest thing. My fingernail turned black and came off. I wouldn't have played for a year.
Oh, it's amazing to me.
Yeah.
The way it had to be. Okay. I got more. See, Charlie, we've been friends forever. I've never asked you these questions. So I'm excited about this. Okay. I'll give an example. What I think is from a hitter's perspective, and this very rarely happened, maybe 5% of the time, but sometimes I'd come out for batting practice and for whatever reason, man, that bat felt good. I was on time. Everything was whap, whap, whap off the bat. I'd get out of the cage and it's almost like, I feel so good that a base hit tonight is really not good enough the way I'm feeling. If I get a pitch to hit, it should be in the seats. More times than not, I would come away from that game and it would mentally start to wear on me throughout the game. Like, I can't feel this good and not get a bunch of numbers tonight. I've got to at least hit a homer or two. And usually I ended up going 0-for-3 with a walk when I felt too good. I didn't like it. It's like, I can't feel too good because then a base hit to right field with a runner on base wasn't good enough. It had to be all. And like I said, very rarely. For your knuckleball, did you have times where, man, it's dancing too much for me, and I know I got to start tomorrow?
You know, what you just said happened so many times to me. Warm up to start a game and walking out to the mound to pitch the first inning, I'm thinking these guys have absolutely no chance today. And then in the seventh or third inning, I've given up like 6 runs, and I don't know how. I got to tell you, I started a game in Oakland when I was with the White Sox. So they had a real good team. And we had the Chicago White Sox had a kid that was trying to learn a knuckleball. And he was in the area. So he was at the game. And I said, walk on down to the bullpen and watch me warm up. And I started warming up and I threw about 6 knuckleballs in a row and they were absolutely awful. I felt lousy and I just said, I'm going in. And I stopped and I went back into clubhouse. And of course, you know me, I had a couple of cigarettes. Game starts. We hit. I came out. I said, well, here we go. I'm going to go out there anyway. And I think I shut him out. I mean, it was just all of a sudden I could throw it again. I was awful. Couple of cigarettes. Let's go.
Isn't it amazing, though? Yeah. You said, you had time. Because when that knuckleball's dancing, I mean, you just don't want to be in the box. And you're just hoping. It's almost, there were times where I'm in the box and I'm just thinking, please just walk me. I'm not even going to swing. Just throw that nastiest knuckleball in the world. Make it ricochet off the catcher's shin guards and just let me go to first. And it seems like in those spots when I thought like that, oh, it's a strike every time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for me. I mean, my biggest problem, I could throw a pretty darn good knuckleball. I would have been really good if I could get it over the plate like a couple of these other guys, but I had a hard time commanding it. And, you know, you might be frustrated at home plate, taking one that's a strike or chasing one. I was just as frustrated on the mound going, why can't I get it over tonight? You know,
right.
It's hard.
93. You're in the expansion draft. You go to the Marlins. You make the first start for the Miami Marlins. How different was that for you? We're getting close to expansion again, I think, Charlie. But yeah. you were the last, you and the Rockies.
Yep.
Because I've got another story about that. Just talk me through that first. You at this stage of the game, you've been in the big leagues 24 years. And you go to the Marlins, you're probably going there with a bunch of kids, guys young enough to be your kids. Tell me what you thought when you were going to that expansion team.
It couldn't have been any better. The whole scenario couldn't have been any better. I grew up 10 miles to Joe Robbie Stadium where the Marlins were going to play. So I grew up in Hialeah, Florida, went to Hialeah High School, get a chance to pitch for that team. And then they say, hey, you're going to pitch the opening day. And it's against the Dodgers and Tommy Lasorda managing the Dodgers still. I was basically home getting to play. It's, you know, kind of a Cinderella story. Here I am 45 years old. And I'm going to pitch the first game in Florida that means anything because it's been spring training for all of our lives, you know. Right. And it couldn't, like I say, it couldn't have been any better. I was home. I was with my brother every day. I had an older brother then. And, you know, 2 years I was there. And like I say, it couldn't have been any better. It was such a thrill to do it. And the Marlins gave me that chance. So, yahoo.
And I want to know if you remember this. When we scheduled this and I knew you were going to come on the Boom podcast, I thought, I think I faced Charlie in his last game. I looked it up. I did. Of course, I said, I never got a hit off you, and I went 0-for. But you faced us, I believe it was in Cincinnati. Is this accurate? Tell me.
That wasn't my last game. No.
It wasn't the last game.
Probably should have been.
So my story
in Cincinnati.
Yeah, my story's off that. Here's what I remember. Yeah. Because we had become friends at that point. We had some off season that we went golfing. Yep. And I remember the night before you had a rough outing. And you came to me, that we were stretching the next day, and I remember coming over to you. Hey, Chuck, how's it going? Ah, Booney, you know, and you could tell.
Yeah.
You weren't emotional. It's not like you had tears in your eyes, but you were kind of, you're giving me that, we're getting close to the end here, Booney. So I'm mistaken. It wasn't the last start, but I remember you kind of coming over, and I could tell.
Booney, I had pitched a shutout. I was 46. I shut out the Cardinals in St. Louis on the turf, and I grounded out a couple of times and tried to run to first. Why I tried to run, I don't know. But my hip, which was rotting at the time, just said, that's it. You're not going to play good anymore. And I think I lost my last five games. But that was just maybe the third or fourth one in a row that I lost.
Yeah.
My last game was against the Phillies. I got knocked out in the first inning.
Against the Phillies. Okay. But it was it was close with me because I remember walking away from our talk right there going,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah. I knew it.
It's kind of like.
Yeah.
And I'm on the other end of the ledger. You know, I'm just getting started, and I'm looking at you. You've been doing this forever, and there was a little bit of emotion. You know, I found out what that emotion was. You know, a few years later, 15 years later, when I knew the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, we're very lucky that we got to play a good length of time. You know, your whole family, but for me to get in there and play as long as I did. And then be able to, the last inning that I pitched, I gave up 5 runs in the first inning. Skipper came out to take me out, and I handed him the ball, and I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I said, a kid's got to be pitching. And that's how we get in the game.
Yeah.
Somebody didn't do good, right? Somebody let Freddie Boone get in there in second base. Somebody
that's
got hurt or whatever, and you took his job. Well, somebody needed to take my job because I couldn't do it anymore, and I knew it.
Yeah. You know,
and that was the first time I went in and clipped my fingernails in 25 years.
Yeah.
And then finally.
Yeah. Finally, I don't have to do this anymore. It's not a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Charlie, I appreciate you coming on. This is a lot of fun catching up. All the best. And just one of my favorite people that we've had a lot of times over the years and a lot of good times and hopefully a lot of good times to come in the future.
Oh, yeah.
But what a great competitor you were. What a great career, Texas Rangers Hall of Famer, and a great friend and one of my favorite guys. And I appreciate you coming on the Boone Podcast. For those of you watching the Boone Podcast, now it is on YouTube as well. For those of you listening, I appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you next time.